Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Leland Berger.
Hi. Thanks for sticking around or coming back or... Here's some free legal advice. It's probably not a good idea to lie to a bank. You're welcome. You're going to hear in the panel after me about a can of bigotry on a personal level. The bans and other efforts of local governments to discriminate against our industry is can of bigotry on an institutional or an elected official level. I told the Medford City Council back when we had the moratorium, remember that, for the medical, you could have a one-year moratorium, and they were like, well, you know, it's going to take us a while to get used to this cultural change and everything, and we just, you know, it violates, what they do is they wrap their can of bigotry in the American flag. They say, well, it violates federal law, and we're not going to allow anything that violates federal law in our town. And I said, but it's law in the state of Oregon. I said, the way you're reacting to this is the way municipalities reacted when they were told they could have only one water fountain at a public place, like a train station or whatever. And the parallels between racism and the can of bigotry that's going on are as stark as that they plain old just don't like our kind. That's what it's about. They equate cannabis business with crime and undesirables. It's the same thing, you know, the Orange Line opened up yesterday, and Ann Leininger, who's, you know, really one of the politest and nicest politicians that you'll ever meet, talked about, because she was on the Clackamas County Commission when they were talking about when there was opposition to the Orange Line about Portland, you know, problems coming in. It's all about racism, and, you know, and when you're talking about prohibition, you can't not talk about racism, and so I'm glad I brought it up. So what are we going to do about it? Well, there's a couple of things we can do about it. First of all, on the medical side, if you are already licensed with an MMD, and if you have what they call a LUX, you know, the Land Use Compatibility Statement, I know Paul mentioned it, and I forgot to mention it this morning, because it's going to be required for all of the adult use licenses, then you are grandfathered in under subsection 6 of section 133 of House Bill 3400. So if you find yourself in a town that does a ban on medical, and you're in a place where your facility is licensed in accordance with the local land use laws, then you're entitled to be there. We're going to be filing suit next week in Malheur County because the city of Ontario is discriminating against a dispensary with, in my opinion, the unfortunate name of 420ville. That fits these criteria, and the city attorney so far we haven't been able to persuade. Insofar as zoning is concerned, you know, I mentioned earlier I associate with Ross Day on zoning and land use issues. In Columbia County, they zoned it so you can't cultivate on any of the, in the county, and that's, you know, a ban, and that's illegal. And Ross appealed it to the Land Use Board of Appeals, and he argued it about a week or two ago. And it's the first time the Land Use Board of Appeals has heard any of these zoning issues, because towns like, for example, Estacada or Gresham, you know, just talking about here in Multnomah County, have used zoning to try and make it almost impossible. We had a case in Almsville, it's 8 miles east of Salem, where it's like, you know, you could be up here by the sewage treatment plant, or you could be down here. Well, no, that's residential. You know, it's so anyway, the municipalities are using zoning sometimes for banning. So, you know, first of all, why should anybody care? Well, people should care because an attack on any of us is an attack on all of us in the first place. So we should care about it here. In the second place, just from a business standpoint, if there are going to be these bans and there's not going to be retail outlets in half the state, that reduces greatly the market for producers and processors. Not everybody's going to be able to travel to where the stores are. And so there's an interest in that. And one person who's recognized this and has raised this issue with a round table of some of the, you know, the wealthier kind of top tier folks in the industry and got nods from them is Don Morse with the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. And Don has met with John Sajo, who I'm going to talk about in a minute, Anthony Johnson and I, and the Oregon Cannabis Business Council is going to be actively and aggressively working on trying to change the minds of city councils and county commissions to get them to do the right thing, kind of like John was able to do in the city of Roseburg. I use city lightly. Actually, there's fewer people in Roseburg, you know, than in Madras, to tell you the truth. So anyway, John, who along with Jack Herrer and a lawyer named Michael Rose and the guy who was the treasurer for the OMMA initiative and I started Voter Power back in 97. And John more recently started a group called co-started a group called the UMQA, Cannabis Industry Association. And actually, you know, Voter Power started as a Douglas County Voter Power. So it may catch on, but the UMQA Cannabis Industry Association, in Douglas County, they voted to ban, and then in Roseburg, they voted to ban, and in Roseburg, the UMQA Cannabis Industry Association, 100 people showed up at a city council meeting, and the city council reversed. I mean, it's important to remember that not everybody's like our friend from the Corvallis City Council who's here, or our friend the mayor of Coquille, but everybody is elected. And so it's important to use some of the citizen lobbying skills that we've developed over the years, or to opt into professional lobbying skills, and I'll talk about that in just a second, to be lobbying at the city council level. If you're gonna do this yourself, there's a couple of important ground rules. City council meetings are not the place to stand up and cuss and yell and scream, and no matter how ignorant and prejudiced the council members are. It's really, in fact, most of the city council and county council or county commission meetings, like most of the legislative hearings, are for show. The real activity is when you call up and say, you know, can I spend 15 minutes with you talking about this issue? And you make the time to do that. The Oregon Cannabis Business Council is going to be utilizing their lobbyist, Nikki Terzieff, to assist in this effort. And if you want to help out with this, you can go to their website. It's OregonCBC.com. I think that at some point there'll be an opportunity to contribute there as well. The other thing that comes up in these local control cases, at least in the lawsuits that we've had, Robert Graham and I had a case from the city of Medford, a business license case. Phil Studenberg, who was here yesterday, I know, also had a business license case in the city of Medford. Robert and I had a dispensary case from the city of Phoenix in Jackson County. And what happens is you go into court and you say, well, this is illegal under state law. And then they come back at you and say, yeah, well, state law is trumped by the Federal Controlled Substances Act. And in Southern Oregon, in Jackson and Josephine counties, or as I've come to call them, Jacobama and Josephsippi counties. No offense, Lori. Well, maybe some offense. I don't know. It's just the local judges. I mean, in Jackson, in Josephine County, for example, there are two cases involving the city of Cave Junction. And the first one was the city seeking a declaration about the state law being trumped by the federal law. And the second one was a case that Robert Graham brought, that Oregon Cannabis Business Council intervened in with their lawyer, Bradley Steinman. Could you stand up, Bradley? Let's thank Bradley for helping out on this effort, all right? He's a young lawyer who's trying to get stuff done for us here. And that case, the second Cave Junction case, that's the case that has the potential, I think, to go to the United States Supreme Court and decide this issue once and for all. For what it's worth, I think we win. I think we win for a series of reasons. I mean, the Federal Controlled Substances Act includes an anti-preemption provision. I don't want to get too lawyerly. You know, at the first one of these that was in Ashland, the way I explain this is rock, paper, scissors, right? You know what I'm talking about, that rock beats, paper wraps rock, scissors cuts paper, rock smashes scissors. So the state law trumps the local law, and the federal law trumps the state law, except not always. And the not always part of it has to do, in this case, with two things. The first thing is that there's an anti-preemption provision in the Federal Controlled Substances Act. It says it doesn't trump it unless, it doesn't preempt it or trump it unless it completely says it's okay to do this in state court and or in state law, but not and it's illegal under federal law. And that's the argument they're raising. Except that's not what 91 is about. 91 isn't about the freedom to grow and process and wholesale and retail weed. It's about being able to do that without being arrested and prosecuted under state law. And there's a doctrine called the anti-commandeering doctrine that says that the federal government can't require the states to criminalize stuff just because the feds criminalized it. I said that in Jackson County, the judge said, really? So we could decriminalize, we could make heroin legal? And I said, of course we could make heroin legal, if that's what we chose to do. So what's going on with that, with what the League of Cities and the Association of Counties refers to as the nuclear option, the suing to declare that the Federal Controlled Substances Act trumps it? Well, first of all, in Cave Junction, the first of the Cave Junction cases has been fully briefed. And because 3400 in section 133 and 134 includes these banning provisions, the state filed a thing called a motion of probable mootness, that it's, you know what, they can't do this anymore. Maybe whether they could do it then, it doesn't matter anymore, and you don't have to decide it. And in Oregon, in the appellate world, we have now an appellate commissioner. The fellow used to be the lawyer for the Supreme Court. And because of a recent Oregon Supreme Court case, in Oregon, we don't have capable of repetition yet evading review. We couldn't, for example, have decided Roe versus Wade because pregnancy would have gone to term and it would have been moot. So that's capable of repetition yet evading review. And there's a recent decision, like a June 15th decision from the Oregon Supreme Court that questions that, and so long story short, the appellate commissioner denied the request, saying it's a jurisprudential matter. It's really up to the panel that's going to hear oral argument, which as of now has not yet been set. The notices of appeal on the second Cave Junction case, have they all been filed, Bradley? So they're all filed, no briefing yet, and so no oral argument or decision yet. Nationally, there's a couple of other cases. Oklahoma and Nebraska have sued Colorado, and saying that because marijuana is legal in Colorado, now all there's this Colorado legal marijuana coming into Nebraska and Oklahoma, and how they in Oklahoma or Nebraska can say that weed is from Colorado and that's from Oregon or wherever, except that, you know, by smoking it and knowing ours is better. But the other, other than that, you know, or that, so I mean, there's this, what lawyers call a standing problem. I mean, they really got, you know, a reason to complain. And what the Supreme Court, the United States, so it's an original proceeding in the United States Supreme Court. That's pretty fucking exciting, huh? You know, you don't often get to file a lawsuit in the United States Supreme Court. And the what the court has done with it, oh, and the good news is that, you know, Washington filed a friend of the, oh, so the court can decide whether to take the case or not. They can say, Oklahoma, Nebraska, get out of here. We're not going to even listen to this one. This is stupid. We're not even going to decide it because we're just not. We have the choice not to, and we don't even have to tell you why not, because we're the Supreme Court, ain't nowhere else to go to ask again. And so they haven't done that. Instead, Washington, the state of Washington, has filed a brief called an amicus brief, a friend of the court brief, in opposition to the court taking the case, you know, urging the court to not take the case. And our attorney general, Ellen Rosenblum, joined in the Washington brief. I was pretty excited to see her do that. She didn't have to, and it was a really good thing. So what the Supreme Court has done is they've asked the Solicitor General of the United States, kind of when the United States appears in court, that's their lawyer, not the Attorney General, Solicitor General, and to file a brief on whether or not they should take the case. And, you know, we're really lucky to have a guy as smart and nationally known as Henry Wieckowski here, and we were having a drink last night, and I was talking to him about it, and he said, you know, Lee, when they ask the Solicitor General to file a brief and don't give them a deadline, they're kind of signaling them that this ought to just, you know, die on the vine, so to speak. So it's another reason why the second Cave Junction case could decide the case, because at least those who are more familiar with Supreme Court practice than I think that the Supreme Court is not going to take the case. There are two racketeering cases in Colorado where neighbors of farmers have, you know, similarly, you know, it smells here, I don't like the smell, and it violates federal law, and this one and the dispensary are committing federal crimes, and there's a nexus, which is a legal word for a connection between the criminal activity, so it's criminal enterprise, so the racketeering law is to be able to go after criminal enterprises, and it involves things like treble damages and attorney's fees, and it's in federal court, and it's federal litigation, so it's, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to defend, and it's, so it's having an you know, a negative effect on the industry there, in the sense that people are afraid to, you know, to offend, I guess, but, you know, being afraid to offend in and of itself isn't a bad thing. I think that, you know, as I talked about a little bit this morning when we were talking about dispensaries, the way that we're going to be able to move things forward is by persuading the non-cannabis consumers that there isn't anything to be afraid of about us, that we come in peace, you know, and that we don't mean to offend or hurt anybody. But in those racketeering cases, this also, you know, it raises this this federal-state preemption issue, and I think that's mostly what I wanted to tell you. I can tell you that on the 23rd of September at 7 o'clock, the Albany City Council is going to be, even though it's not on their agenda, is going to be taking up their ban and, you know, reconsidering it. I you know, again, John showed us in Roseburg that we can persuade city councils to change their positions when they're, you know, well-educated. Really, you know, the thing of it is that, except for in Ontario where they really don't care, I mean, it's important to explain that citing a dispensary or allowing a processing plant or a, or a cultivation area isn't increasing the demand. The demand exists. The demand has always existed. People have been consuming cannabis, and what they've been, where they've been getting it from, is the underground market. And that the whole point of the industry part of Measure 91 is to try and get rid of, or at least limit as much as possible, the underground market. That's the point. It's an anti-crime piece of legislation. And that when you choose to ban, you choose to allow the underground market to flourish. And in a lot of these, you know, economically distressed communities, as the Coquille mayor said earlier today, you know, our industry is the only growth industry around, really, and it creates the opportunity for the multiplier effect. You know what I'm talking about? If you have a store, it's not just the 3% from the store, it's from, you know, the munchies afterwards, and munchies save lives, you know, Rick Smith said that. It's from, you know, going to buy food or restaurants or hotels or whatever. It's just a huge economic engine.
The guy who builds the grow room gets paid, right? The electrician gets paid. Like, everybody gets money. There's so many different, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I get excited about telling people about this. There's so many different businesses that will benefit from legal cannabis, not just growers and sellers.
No, I'm glad that you interrupted, because, Ngayo, that's all I have, unless anybody has any questions.
Let's hear it again for Lee Berger. Right?